Amazon tax. We're here to discuss sales tax issues as they apply to Amazon. First off, who enjoys paying sales tax? We have some patriotic individuals. Well, we're going to be discussing a little bit about state legislature's attempts to pull sales tax off of Amazon sales. So, introductions, and we had a late addition, so he didn't make it on here, but we'll just kind of go down the row, I guess. I'm Brent Howell. I'm an attorney from Mississippi. I practice in entertainment, technology, and intellectual property law. And Peter?
Oh, yeah. There I am.
Jeez. There you are.
God, that's cute. I'm Peter Friedman. I have an office in San Francisco, New York, and in New Hampshire, which is why I love sales tax, because New Hampshire doesn't have one. My practice is interstate commerce, and usually we just picked up a new specialty, which is medical marijuana dispensaries.
And I am Michael Gordon. I am a third-year law student at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And the reason that I'm most interested in intellectual property law, but the reason that I'm here is I wrote a paper about this that was published in the North Carolina Journal of Law and Technology. So,
I'll show the paper.
All right. I'll show the paper. And if anyone wants to actually read it, come up to me afterwards and I can tell you how to get it. It's available for free online.
Free?
Yeah.
Free, okay. I thought we were going to push his book or something.
Which means as a law student, he's put entirely too much thought into this.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. I did a semester's worth of research on it. It's
okay.
Go for it.
Let's go.
All right, so I guess a good place to start is just kind of why these things are an issue. You know, clearly we're a consumer society in the U.S. Our economy is driven by sales. And most states, New Hampshire being a very notable exception, fund a lot of their stuff through sales tax. And I will say from the time I spent in New Hampshire that they are fiercely, fiercely proud of not having one.
Yes. So, I mean, just realize our governor has to make the oath, where he will not pass a sales tax. And if he doesn't make the oath, he doesn't get elected. We're very easygoing people. We have more guns per person than any other state, you know, so.
But they live free or die.
Yeah, we do have 50 people. We have maybe 5,000 guns.
Well, in general, kind of as we've been having some issues with the national economy, it seems like a lot of the states have been trying to find more ways to reach out and grab more money. And looking at this, Amazon sales in 2009 were $24.5 billion. Average sales tax seems to range around 5-7%, which you say is fairly accurate.
Yeah.
So that's a very sizable percentage of money if the local state governments can get their hands on it. And that's really what they're trying to do here. What's been kind of your experience with dealing with that?
I mean, what's happened is obviously, you know, the internet commerce pretty much mirrors the 80s and 90s with the catalog sales. Mm-hmm. The catalog sales does not have as great an impact as the internet commerce does. So the states are really running around desperate for the money. 5-7%, you know. I mean, that is why, you know, depending on how old you are, if you remember your old tax returns individually, they never mentioned anything about use tax. Use tax is the fallback position of sales tax, where if you didn't pay sales tax on your purchase, you're supposed to voluntarily declare it to the federal. New York, well, and there are now 32 states that have a line on their tax return now that says, hi, what use tax do you owe? And they voluntarily want you to state it.
The states that don't put it on their tax returns still say that you're supposed to remit the use tax. Even you're supposed to do it even if they don't ask you about it, which is a really difficult position for a person to be put in to know that. But the other thing that's interesting about it is even if you do pay the sales tax in one state, I think Georgia's, does anyone know what the sales tax rate is in Georgia?
Doesn't matter, make it up.
Okay, so let's say it's 6%. North Carolina's What? Okay, say it's 6% in Georgia, it's 7.75% in North Carolina. Well, you're supposed to get, if you live in North Carolina, you take the item from Georgia to North Carolina, you're still supposed to pay North Carolina 1.75%. Because that's the difference between what you paid Georgia and what you would pay North Carolina.
Well, and I guess the point of that being it's all really complicated, which
yes.
is part of the issue they're running into with state legislators trying to tax this. But I guess we'll get to that a little bit more here in a few minutes. I guess a good place to start would be Quill versus North Dakota. This was a Supreme Court case that was actually talking about catalog sales and shipping between states. And this is kind of the granddaddy case, and it really governs a lot of these issues because even though we're dealing in an internet age, a lot of the legal issues are the same. Generally, the holding of Quill was that a retailer must have a physical presence, actually specifically says a substantial nexus, with the state before that state can charge sales tax. Basically, it's just an issue of if I run a business out of North Carolina, it doesn't make sense for Texas to be able to show up and start telling me what to do because I don't have anything to do with Texas. So it's just a question of at what point is my action in Texas, if I'm mailing there, so substantial that there is a reasoning behind them pulling me in. One of the bases for this ruling was that it was that allowing states to start taxing like this would burden interstate commerce, which is a domain really set over for Congress. And just the sheer complexity of trying to do taxes for all 50 states would just be a nightmare. So the Supreme Court in this case basically said this is not a sales tax, they can't get sales tax here.
All right, now take a look at what year this got passed, 1992. Think about computers, 1992. Think about computers today. There are programs out there now that literally have taken the burden of complexity out of this issue. I mean, I can name four that basically are all based on geolocale systems. The other humorous aspect of this is that you have to have a physical presence. This kind of gets into a definition. Do you have definition of nexus in there?
I didn't, no.
Didn't, okay. Because if you had a slide, I wasn't going to go there.
But yeah, go ahead and go.
Right. And you'll have two lawyers. I'll be with you in a second. I'm going to lose a thought. I have been drinking like you wouldn't believe. You know, I came to Con with a full head of hair. Look what alcohol can do to you. But nexus pretty much is that you have created an economic establishment in a geographical area, therefore you're going to pay tax in that geographical area. What we usually call a physical establishment, brick and mortar. You have a store there, you're in the state of Georgia, in Atlanta. You've established that you're selling and buying in that state. Quill pretty much kind of created a bright line that says, okay, you know, just because you have agents in that state, nah, you don't have nexus. You haven't created this economic physical establishment in that state, so you don't have to pay tax in that state. Well, the issue of nexus in 1992 was the same in the U.S. as it was in Europe. The problem came about in 2002 under the VAT Amendment Number 6. Jeez, I still know this shit. Under VAT Amendment Number 6, they changed nexus, and here's the difference between Europe and us. And I bring this up because we have been slowly sliding to European standards and European tax law in regards to this. We have taken, in 1992, both were the same, it was the same system. It is not where the customer is, it is where the physical establishment is selling. That is where you are going to be taxed. So if you are in Oregon and you sell to somebody in New York, Oregon wins, not New York. If you are in England and you sold to somebody in France, you pay what they call VAT tax, value attributed tax, in England. The Sixth Amendment basically changed everything in Europe, which said, because the internet is a distribution, it no longer matters where you are, it matters where the customer is. And Europe has passed it, and that is direct violation of what Quill would say. But if Amazon sells into Europe, and they do sell in Europe, trust me on this, all right, they pay sales tax based on the location of where the goods are being delivered.
Which, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, I slightly disagree with Peter's reading of Quill. I think that what it really says is, because the company Quill sent catalogs to people in North Dakota, but didn't actually have any people in the state. They didn't have any employees or contractors in North Dakota. They just sent catalogs, and North Dakota said, you have to pay us sales taxes because what you're doing is getting these people who are there to, you're taking advantage of the North Dakota market, and that creates a substantial nexus. And that's what North Dakota said. The Supreme Court said, no, you need to actually have some sort of physical presence to be able to collect taxes, which is what I think that Quill said. And I'm not sure that we're moving to the place where it's going to be that it matters where the consumer is. Although I guess we are moving that direction.
Well, I mean,
think about it.
I mean, we're not going to. Because I know you got slides on this.
Okay.
Right. So much for slides.
Well, no,
but
they're short slides. So let's go.
Right. I mean, not that I would refute a potential new attorney. I being, you know, an old crusty accountant. But if you like the, I got half. But if you look at the SSTP, they pretty much have stated, and the SSTP is a state streamlined sales tax project, which basically is to unify and harmonize sales taxes in the United States. It's an interesting program. They have met their requirements. And the secondary issue is there are a lot of states that have adopted all their rules and regulations. One of their major rules is that sales tax is to be determined based on where the customer is.
Yeah.
Not they don't really care who is being sold to whom. Now, this is a state issue. Okay, that's intrastate commerce, not interstate commerce. Interstate commerce is federally mandated. So the state can sit there and say whatever they want from an intrastate perspective. They can try and enforce it on an interstate level, but there is no law that allows them to. Taking that into effect, understand that Dell has volunteered to join the SSTP program. So that if you buy Dell products, they theoretically are charging you sales tax in the state that you're in.
Well, and one of the issues I see with that is the way the jurisdiction law works. It's typically if a company does something bad and you want to sue them, you have to really go to the jurisdiction where they are. So, and a lot of the nexus language used in jurisdiction law is similar to the nexus language in this. I mean, nexus is the word. And in that case, you would go completely the other direction. You'd say, oh, well, you know, I can't sue them where the consumer is. I have to go sue them where the company's located. So you've really got the same, it's really just actually a big mess because you've got the same language being applied in two completely contrary fashions depending on what you're working with.
Right. I'm sorry, you did have a question.
It was regarding, does Nexus cover retail stores or warehouses?
Oh, okay. But I didn't want you to think I forgot you.
I wasn't sure how warehouses, but you said they're agents.
Right.
Warehouses fit, although I will discuss later if we have time something that a trick that Amazon pulls to try to avoid that.
Yeah, but it's not that. He's a lawyer.
Amazon is forced to collect sales tax in every state. Would customers be required to pay back their sales tax or go back to some other time?
All right, let's use North Carolina as an example. Because it kind of covers your answer. North Carolina, all right, and let me clarify, if I could clarify this,
yeah,
right?
Go ahead.
It is called the Amazon tax because it was specifically designed to go after Amazon, but it is any internet company that uses affiliates as a program to generate income. Okay, so we call it, it was nicknamed the Amazon tax, but it could be, Borders Books Online also falls under this tax, okay? I mean, and there's cash limitations on how much they're supposed to make based on each state, so, all right. What was this question?
Can you read the question? We've got
back taxes.
I'm telling you, this
back
taxes. Okay, North Carolina has put out an amnesty that states that they will, and an amnesty is, we'll forgive the back if you come forward. and they have gotten a response of, I believe, of what they consider 450 online retailers that would be in the program. 12 have come forward and stated, yes, they will join the program, and therefore all their back tax issues are forgiven.
Although from the standpoint of the consumer, it's not something to worry about as much, just because there's no way the government is going to be able to track down who all spent that sales tax.
Jeez, I'm joining him with the hands.
Okay.
I mean, this is
You're talking North Carolina, and actually North Carolina has done something really interesting. The North Carolina State Department of Revenue has asked Amazon for all of their sales records for all North Carolina customers, including what items were bought.
But Amazon has to turn them over for you to get anywhere.
Yes, and Amazon is refusing to turn them over, but taking the state to court.
But it's in court.
Yeah.
I mean, in court. I mean, the issue's going to
they're
be...
trying.
That goes back to that jurisdiction issue, though.
Well, you know what Amazon's argument is this.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that.
Amazon's argument is great. Hi, we're Amazon. If we have to disclose who our customers are in that state, it could hurt our future sales. So therefore, we're not going to do it.
Not only it will.
Well,
and then there are also civil liberties groups that are getting in on this as well.
And my thing is that's the wrong argument to make. The right argument to make is, look, you know, we don't have any stores in any physical locations in North Carolina. You don't have jurisdiction.
Right. I mean, that is the argument. But they didn't make the argument. Right, that's not their argument.
And I don't understand that because, you know, I looked at it and that was my first thought. And, you know, I would assume that Amazon's attorneys are kind of up on this thing.
But I have a funny, I guess my concern would be that since they lost the case in regards to the state law saying if you have affiliates, you're in the state.
And that may be.
Right. Therefore, because you have affiliates in the state, they've already decided we're not going to argue that again because we've lost that again.
Well, they lost in New York under New York law, though.
Well, they lost in North Carolina, too.
North Carolina hasn't had a court case about it, but North Carolina took the New York law and copied it. Basically,
congratulations to your state of New York, by the way.
Yes, sir.
Does Amazon vet their affiliates, or does anybody sign up?
I'm sorry?
Does Amazon vet their affiliates, or can anybody just sign up?
What do you mean by vet?
No, I know who you mean.
Okay.
No, don't worry.
Okay.
You're young. Don't worry. God, I feel so old.
Just go to Amazon and say, I want to be an affiliate.
Yes, and you fill out a piece of paper, and you basically, they do a credit check. They make sure you're not a criminal. And then home office in Portland, aren't they based out of
Seattle?
Seattle basically blesses it, and that's how you become it. Now, understand, by the way, if you're in North Carolina or Rhode Island, you are no longer going to be an Amazon affiliate.
That's right.
And I'm sure we will discuss.
Yes.
Amazon, yes, ma'am.
Well, I do actually live in New York, and I'm trying to remember. I guess you just bought something on Amazon the other day, and I paid it self. Because I think I do pay it.
Amazon, you got to jump in faster.
All right.
Amazon now, because they've lost all their court cases in New York, now charges a sales tax if you live and order in New York.
Yeah. Okay, so they charge New York sales tax?
Right, based on your, it's called geolocation, geographic location. So a perfect example, New York City has a certain sales tax, Nassau County has a certain, right? So it's the geolocale of where you're living where the sales tax will be.
When you made the purchase or where it's shipped to?
It gets very interesting.
Yes.
What?
Did you have your cousin order something?
Right, I understand where you're going. No, that isn't, because what happens is your cousin could order it. Right?
From Texas.
Your cousin then will pay with his credit card, because if he uses your credit card, he gets charged sales tax based on your geolocale.
Okay.
Because when you fill out, you know, the credit card nonsense, you know, with the computer, it says, hi, and where's, you know why they really want to know where the billing address is? So they can calculate where the geolocale sales tax goes.
You can actually see this on iTunes too. I know where iTunes. Where I live, I have to type in, you give them the zip code, and whenever it approves it actually has a drop down for what county I live in. Because even though where I live, the two counties have the same sales tax rate, they still need to know which county it is because the zip code splits counties.
Right. But I want to go, you know, we talk about, and we're going to go back, and I want to know, I want to get really why I think the Amazon argument to North Carolina about, you know, giving up is absurd. Just picture if you go into like E-Trade and picture all the names and all the people that are doing this E-Trade business type of thing. And look how many files they have, and you know 90%, you know, E-Trade has come out and said 90% of our people are not responding and not paying taxes on our businesses. Yeah. So it's like they don't want to give up files. Yeah, so it's a whole No, when I'm saying E-Trade, eBay, I mean there's like five of them. Right. eBay and their ISP and the ISPs are all going nuts. Yes.
I was just going to say, you were questioning the legal validity of the argument, and immediately I thought, they're actually not arguing to lawyers, they're arguing to their affiliates and all of their friends and saying, go to your Congress prayer, start a ruckus.
Didn't work in Colorado.
No, nope. It might not work, but and that it might be their...
No, I mean, yeah, I'm sure it is, but, you know, I mean, we're talking, and it will be there. We'll get into the Amazon. Okay. We'll get into the retaliation.
And that might be
Amazon.
The best way to handle it. We'll, as we go through, we'll go by each state that's done this and see how that's kind of come out. Yes, sir.
Two questions, really. One, jumping back to the use tax you were talking about before, the exposure report where you said basically if you buy something in, say, a 6% mm-hmm. sales tax state and you actually live in an 8% sales tax state, so you're supposed to give the difference that they can live in. Mm-hmm. Does a reverse also apply?
No.
The other state owes you 2%?
No.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a good try. You have to go to the state that had, let's say you bought it in an 8% state and you're in a 6% state and you had it shipped. You actually have to apply to the 8% state to get your 2% back.
But
there is a mechanism in place that you can do that, but the time and the cost involved, you better have one hell of a large friggin' purchase.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
From a practical standpoint, do they really have a mechanism,
yes.
or do they just have a mechanism on paper?
No, they actually have a form.
Okay.
Yeah, they have
so
a form.
Well, I mean, you have a form, but is someone employed to actually look at the form?
Oh no, the form's you know scanned in, and
okay.
The issue is going to be for $20, the amount of work you would have to go through to get the $20 back from a state, you could be and understand you can get audited by that state. And because you're making the form in that state, you have to travel to that state, you know. So I'm not going to say it's an easy thing to get the money, but, you know, it has to. I mean, my recommendation has always been, and there are people that do this, you know, if you're not talking a couple thousand dollars, you're not going to do it, you know.
My other question would be more regarding the sales tax, having the sales tax at the consumer or the purchaser state. Is there any mechanism, or would there be anything for somebody, say, starting a business in Florida, or one of the 0%, or not Florida, but one of the 0% sales tax states as kind of a transfer agent for, instead of, for like 1%, particularly on expensive small charges, and just either shipping it to them and they pay the sales tax and they forward it to you, or just using the gift type shipping that Amazon offers where your billing address is here, but you're shipping it up there, and therefore bypassing all the sales tax for a smaller fee.
Again, it kind of goes, I'm not sure, but it's the haze, trust me. But the whole issue there is, it's based on geolocale, so let's say you have a third party in a non-state buying on your behalf and then shipping to you, right? Drop shipments basically are gonna be, if you go to Amazon, you do a drop shipment, it's gonna end up being taxed, and they use your credit card, and it's your drop shipping, even though it's a third party area, okay? You're gonna
use your credit card, but if they purchase it for you and you send them a check or whatever.
But then that middle agent basically owes sales tax on that purchase. Or
but if they're in a zero sales tax or low sales tax.
But they're shipping it to you and you're not in one. So they have to collect it off of you.
If they have a physical presence in your state.
Not if you go under a customer base.
Okay.
Right. And trust me, in that regard, if I had a client, I'm not sure about you because, you know, you're a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you create law. I just have to live with it.
I don't create law either.
No. Oh, okay. Forget that then.
I
would sit there and say if a client came to you and said, hi, we have a business, we're creating it, we're gonna basically solicit orders, collect the orders, then ship the product to another state. And by doing this, we are circumventing a potential sales tax issue, ignoring that there's a freight cost issue, right? I mean, I would sit there, from my perspective as an accountant, I would sit there and say, you have one hell of an exposure.
Yeah, and that's kind of would be my response in a situation like that. I would actually look at the client. My first thing would be, okay, talk to an accountant and see where your potential liabilities are. And my advice is to you is to avoid them, but if you choose to do so, write a long cover my butt letter. But if you choose to ignore it, that's your problem.
Right.
So, I mean.
And then we're going to change this by one thing. And I agree.
Yeah.
100% with you. And you have to understand there's another strange aspect here, is that the IRS has now passed laws saying that if you are taking uncertain tax positions, you are now required to disclose it on your tax return. That would be one hell of a disclosure, don't you think? And here's the real funny part. The feds share information with the state. Okay. Does the state share information with the feds? They're supposed to, but they don't. It's too much of a headache for them. Go ahead, sir.
I have a question. What you're saying about right now about the feds and the state sharing information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say somebody, I don't know, buys something on Amazon that might be controversial, like, I don't know, like the Turner Diaries or Mein Kampf, and they have to, do you think people are afraid they may actually, like, give that information to the feds, and the feds will, like, put you on some list or something with the Patriot Act, that, you know, you're buying, you know, material that could be anti-government or...
Well, I mean, I don't know, is Mein Kampf allowed to be sold to anybody in Germany yet?
I don't think so.
But I could be, I mean, they've been, you know, playing with those rules a bit. So if you were a German citizen, let's discuss it. You're a German citizen, you ordered on Amazon.com Mein Kampf, right? And they ship it to Germany. I would guarantee you that Amazon, to cover their butt legally, would be writing a little note to the Germans saying, hi, we just sent this information.
Yeah.
Or not even ship it or send it.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, from their standpoint, they stand to lose a lot if they run afoul of the government and get blocked out. I mean, you don't want to end up in a situation kind of like with Google in China. So, I mean, you do, for one sale, it's not really worth it. So it's like anything else in business. There's a cost-benefit analysis they have to go through. Is it worth it to pass over or not? Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to know, so what did Amazon do to the states that have done that?
We're getting there.
Okay.
We're
all
getting
right
there. That's we that, still have a couple of minutes.
That's a good prompt to move to the next slide.
And what?
Okay. Explain affiliate programs for us. Actually.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
There you go.
All right.
Did you see him try and duck out of that?
No, so in an affiliate program, Amazon creates a contract with someone who runs a website, and they put a little box on their website or a link on their website, and they, if someone clicks through that link or that box to buy a product on the affiliate's website, you know, on Amazon's website, then the affiliate gets paid some percentage, a commission. On Amazon, it's up to 15%. Usually, it's not that high. Is that the affiliate that you wanted? Do you want me to explain how they how the states have decided that they create a substantial nexus?
Why are you going? Keep on going.
Okay.
You're running on this.
Going great.
All right. So what New York and North Carolina have done is that they've decided that if you have affiliates in that state who solicit for business from that state, and you get $10,000 or more in sales from affiliates in that state, then there's a rebuttable presumption that you have a physical presence in the state.
Bam.
Yep.
And I can explain what that means.
He said.
Well, and you know, and according to New York, that's valid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that personally, but I think there is at least an argument there. And these were the kind of the states that I looked at just doing a quick search. Apparently, there's more. I guess these are the most famous of the bunch. You got New York. They were trying to tax based on that affiliate structure. Rhode Island, North Carolina, kind of followed New York. Colorado was interesting in that they had a little different take on things.
Jesus.
And I think, actually, from my perspective, because I think the affiliate nexus there is a little shaky, I think Colorado's got a point. What they decided to do is they say, okay, Amazon, we're not going to tax you. What we're going to tell you to do is hand over all your records for Colorado citizens with how much they've bought off Amazon, and they're going to pay it. The difference being that with Colorado, they definitely have jurisdiction over their own citizens, so they can enforce that so long as Amazon will actually hand those records over.
Oh, no, it wasn't. Actually, I want to correct you.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, which is normal.
Yeah, we do this.
We do that. You can correct me anytime you want, by the way. And then I'm going to know. Colorado's TAT law stated specifically that Amazon was to send a notice to the customer.
Oh, you're right.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's rare I'm right, trust me. You know, that they were supposed to send a notice to the customer telling them how much they owed in taxes. Amazon was not supposed to send any records to the state.
Okay, I misspoke. Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
But that's what you meant to say. Right. I knew you did.
Right.
No, I
knew. You're absolutely correct. Yes, ma'am.
Well, that kind of goes both ways. Isn't that your privacy and safety?
Yeah. Well, but Amazon
all the records.
Well, no, but understand, this was Colorado's law. You bought from Amazon, right?
Right.
So therefore, there is no privacy between you and Amazon. Amazon was supposed to send you a notice saying how much you owe in taxes.
Wait. Can we just back this up?
Sure. He misspoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if I brought a book from, I'm not going to get into what book. It doesn't matter. I brought the
right. Just, pick a book.
What a science fiction book.
Why should the government know what I brought from Amazon?
And I guess
even brought anything from
Amazon. I guess the issue is, with this kind of setup, Amazon is not revealing anything to the government. They're sending you a notice.
Okay.
You choose to follow the law and send that in to your state government and pay the taxes on it, that's your decision, so you can either disclose it or not.
And also, understand, if you went to Barnes & Noble, a bookstore, and went and bought that book in New York, you would have paid a sales tax on it, all right? Barnes & Noble isn't keeping track, per se. When they basically inform the state, they have a lump sale versus the sales tax that you paid, and all they're doing is paying it to there.
Right.
Okay, that's what that issue is, okay? And the state is saying, pretty much, we want our sales tax. Or you, as an individual in New York State, have a line on your taxes that says, I purchased certain items and I owe you a use tax. And you're supposed to voluntarily state it.
Now, I think it's important to point out that this is the Colorado program. And actually, to your point, North Carolina has requested North Carolina has requested all of the records of every specific item that people have purchased from Amazon. And Amazon is saying, no, we do not want to give this over. And they're suing the state to prevent having to give over the records.
Yes, sir.
You said that Amazon is expected to send the citizens of Colorado a tax notice.
That's what the law stated. They don't have to do it, and we'll get into why in a moment.
But I was going to say, wouldn't that expose Amazon to tremendous liability because they're now doing tax accounting work and they're not a tax accounting company?
No, what the law stated was they take a retail sale because you specify your retail customer, and they take where you are and they say what you sold, not by product but total dollar amount, times your geolocale's tax rate, and say this is what you should pay. Now,
but
you could refute that. You can sit there and say it's not taxable in the state. You don't have to even pay this notice because you're supposed to pay the notice to the state.
But let's say I pay it and Amazon got my calculation wrong. Are they then not culpable?
No, because basically they're saying what you did. Okay, they're allowed to make mistakes. All right, you have the fine. You are the one that's filing the form. They're not preparing the form for you. Okay, they're telling you hi. You know, kind of like hi, how are you? You in your state based on your
account. The government can require Amazon to essentially act in an ad hoc way?
Yes.
That's what they're trying to do, at least.
That's what they tried. That's what they did do.
And yeah. Well, they required it. But if Amazon has not actually complied yet, then
Amazon's not complying for a different reason.
We will get there. But the point being is a question of are they actually? Well, they're trying to require, but are they successfully requiring them?
But to
get back to your other issue, though, as far as from an accounting standpoint, every retailer you do business with is doing that kind of a calculation. So it's not really that much different than what everybody else is doing. They're just keeping records for a year as opposed to a one-time record. Right. But all businesses that are doing, you know, collecting sales tax are supposed to do it on everything. So,
and they have a record retention of 7 years. So,
And Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think nonprofits don't have to pay sales tax.
You're wrong.
Okay.
What? Did that come out too glib? No, I apologize. I do a lot of nonprofits now because of medical marijuana. Don't ask me. And
I'm sure it pays well. So
it was something that I had to do. And the laws do not exempt nonprofits from sales tax.
Okay. So, move along. I wanted to just go down the list of what each of the states have done, or is that a bit too verbose?
No.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Let's start off with California, since that's your state.
California basically had a law. It was proposed. It was passed. Arnold vetoed the law. It has been reintroduced for next year's legislature.
Okay, then move on down to Colorado, I guess.
The law to do what?
We are saying that these are the states that have proposed an Amazon tax, where Amazon basically will collect tax based on their affiliation network.
Okay, so it's not law yet in California. It's, they're just considering it.
Right.
Repeatedly.
Until it gets passed.
Yeah.
Colorado passed the law. Colorado's law was that Amazon, based on their affiliation, had to keep records and send notices to their residents. Amazon created a tremendous stink. All the affiliates in the state of Colorado at the last minute rose up, united in stance against this. The law got passed, and Amazon basically canceled their affiliation program in the state. There is no such thing as an Amazon affiliate in the state of Colorado anymore.
Which they've also done that in New York.
No, not in New York.
They haven't in New York.
Rhode Island, another state that passed. Also, there is no longer a Rhode Island Amazon affiliate program.
Because basically Amazon is trying, they have that New York ruling that affiliates give them a substantial nexus. So as soon as somebody passes a law, cut the affiliates, no more nexus.
Right.
And that's, I think, a pretty good strategy from a legal standpoint. Although it's a good way to make your affiliates mad.
They're
ex-affiliates at that point.
They're ex-affiliates. And I think why they let, and by the way, New York still has an Amazon affiliate program. And it all comes down to money. Mm-hmm. I mean, New York has stated that since they passed the Amazon tax, they have gotten an additional $120 million in tax revenue.
And that's what all the other states are going for.
And that's,
you know.
Yeah, and Amazon took a look and said, Rhode Island, Colorado, we don't make enough money off of you.
And North Carolina as well. They canceled the North Carolina affiliates program.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what they did in that, are we going to talk about exactly how that went down in North Carolina?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so what they did in North Carolina was Amazon said, you know, it was considered in the state legislature, they sent a notice to all their affiliates in North Carolina saying, if this passes, we're going to have to close out your affiliate accounts. And before the law passed, Amazon closed out all the affiliate accounts saying, we think it's going to pass. Go contact your state legislatures if you want to get your account back. North Carolina passed it anyway.
And that's the issue here is there's so much potential money on the table for the states, I'm sure they're not real concerned about a couple of affiliates. I mean, they can try to rally together, but, you know, money's money.
And there is one thing that, you know, when we talk, we're not talking a dollar. There is a threshold. So if you have an internet business out there and you're selling and you keep your affiliate program, why? Because you have to make at least $10,000 in that state before this even comes about for you to even look at.
$10,000 in sales from those affiliates in that state?
No.
In North Carolina, that's how it works.
Not in New York.
Okay.
And I only care about New York.
Well, in North
Carolina. You don't have an affiliate program anymore, fella.
And I think what's important to bring up here, though, is the, because this is kind of pointing this out, it's complicated. Amazon, I think, is able to handle some of these burdens. I'm not so sure about other small internet-based companies who are making more than 10,000 in sales, because this is a tax nightmare to have to keep up with all this junk, and all these laws apply to everybody, even though it was targeting Amazon.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And, you know,
I mean, the de minimis rule is low.
Okay. Yeah, but I think that's really the reason why I feel like most of these are not appropriate, is because there is a burden on interstate commerce, a pretty severe one, because, you know, most of our economy runs off of small businesses. That's fact.
I agree.
And I think that this really stifles small businesses on it, you know, and it's something the states are doing. So I really feel like they're getting out of their realm of what they're constitutionally allowed to do for that reason. Right. And that's the Quill case.
Right. And I think this is, and we both, I mean, if we just talk about this from a small business perspective, this is not evening the playing field.
No.
I mean, this is literally making it so that larger companies that do this are you've got now another cost entry to get into another state.
Right. You're basically, it's almost as bad as setting up a franchise.
Yeah.
It's like, I've got to franchise myself in all 50 states to be able to run a small internet business. And that just is not economically viable, especially for, you know, small startups, unless you can afford to get lots of venture capital, which most projects you're not going to get that on.
Yep.
So, I mean, and I think that's really the core of my issue with states trying to do this. And
I mean, I guess my concern, and I agree with you, I think this is just stifling small business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what this tax is about. You stifle small business. How Amazon, I think, though, that Amazon, how they've reacted to it,
mm-hmm.
where they basically just kill their affiliation programs, I know this is going to be a rough word, but I think ethically and morally, I think it's an incorrect position. It's a business decision.
Yes.
I respect that.
Yes.
But ethically and morally, you have small business families out there making their living in a terrible economic time, right? And basically,
congressman,
hmm?
I mean, at the end of the day, is it Amazon's problem or is it the state's issue?
This has been an issue that has been going on since the SSTP came about.
But it's not Amazon's job to make sure small businesses succeed. It's Amazon's job to make sure that Amazon succeeds.
You know what? If Amazon doesn't rely upon small businesses and their affiliation network, Amazon isn't succeeding.
Well,
because they're going to go out of business.
That's Amazon's issue to figure out whether it...
Well, that's what Amazon did. Amazon said, hi, any state that we're making money off of that we want to, we'll keep. All right? And we're talking, and we went ahead. New York,
like
California.
States.
Well, no, New York, California, Illinois is going to be in there. You're going to have Florida in there. You're going to have.
And so, not only are you really stifling small business, you're also being discriminatory based on location.
Absolutely.
So you're saying that a small business can't thrive unless it's one of those three states, because otherwise we don't care about you. If you're Georgia or Texas or, you know, whatever, oh, we don't sell enough, you're toast.
Which is why we said ethically and morally.
Well.
Yeah.
Ethically and morally. I think that the oil company that basically, you know, turned off the explosion, you know, had a great move. I mean, just because the well blew up and now we're sitting in the Gulf Coast with a giant oil spill, no big deal. There was no ethical and moral issue. I mean, it was all business. Turn off something in that regard. I'm sorry. I think business has an ethical and moral responsibility to the people that live in the area that they live.
I would think the states have a responsibility to promote small business, because it's the future for. I mean,
but states have never. States don't promote small business. The current administration doesn't support small.
But from a jobs perspective, politically, they ought to.
Jobs perspective, it makes sense, and I know some do. I know Mississippi, actually, since I'm over there.
Because the states need to grow their revenue by growing the economy.
Right, and it makes sense for them to do it, but not all of the states have jumped on that bandwagon.
Well,
so,
but the other aspect is the states are looking right now. The states have
looking for money.
They need money today because of all the promises they made 10 years ago when the economy was booming. They basically based on their cash flow and their projections and their bonds and their pensions and said, based on the economic growth, this is what we're going to grow it at, and therefore we're going to have the money to make these things. Well, now these things are coming due, and they don't have the money because the economic projections didn't come about. So they're right now, they're looking at, you know, do you worry about 10 years out or 5 years out, or you worry about, hey, do I pay the bill today? Because I got to pay the bill today, and I don't happen to have the printing press.
Yes, yes ma'am.
Does pay sales tax. Now, I personally just don't consider it that big of a deal to pay the sales tax. They're collecting it, I pay it. But I'm kind of understanding what the let's just say that if Amazon had to collect sales tax in 50 states,
mm-hmm.
would it be, I guess my first question is, would it be logistically possible with today's software?
Yes.
And
yes.
Number two, if please, it's maybe by county, maybe a settlement would be each state would agree on a state sales tax for internet purposes, and then they wouldn't have to do it by county and all this other stuff.
That would be great.
In regard to your number two,
it is a proposal under the state streamlined sales tax project that an out-of-state vendor selling over the internet or shipping into your state has one sales tax, okay? That has not been, it's proposed. But yeah, the state streamlined sales tax is not federal law.
Right.
It's some of the states that have passed it have not passed legislation on it yet.
Right.
Well, and I think part of it is it's a federalism issue because the Congress can't tell the states what to charge. The states have to agree. So as long as the states are not in lockstep, you can't really do that. And this is really, because it's a national issue and because we're talking about issues in interstate commerce, it's probably more appropriate for Congress to be acting than the states acting.
And actually, in Quill, the Supreme Court said that. This is a place for Congress to act and invited Congress to take some action, either to say, no, you can't, or yes, you can, or this is how it's going to happen. And Congress has done nothing.
No. Take a step back. You're getting too excited. You're too young. Take a step back. First of all, there have been, in the last 5 years, there have been 10 bills put up into Congress to define what Nexus is and this. So they have taken action. The action has not passed. That I will agree.
Okay, well, but that's what I mean by taking action.
It's a nuanced point.
It's a big nuanced point of having one goal.
I disagree on what action means, so.
There are 30,000 or so bills introduced each year.
Right.
If they had hearings and things, I would say, well, sort of, but just introducing something.
No, they've had hearings. They've had hearings on both ends. They've had hearings basically saying it's one, to create a national nexus definition.
Okay.
The other is, and that's why I'm saying there were 10 in 5 years, because you have always the other bill saying it is states' rights,
and the
states must determine what the hell they want to do. And both, and there have been hearings on them. Some of them, and some of them have gotten past committee and gotten to vote on the floor. All right, so.
And it seems like there's a political breakdown here, because I can't see why the states would be opposed to getting a bite out of this, you know, any of them would be opposed to getting a bite out of this, and this would be a way for Congress to help fund those states without handing them a check. So it would seem like if you get them all in a room to agree, then you know, it would be a problem, but they're politicians, they don't do that. Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, you know, we talked about at a state level, but, you know, counties, municipalities, cities, all charge state, you know, all charge sales tax in various regions.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, what is going to be the impact on, say, Amazon if they've got to, you know, cut a check for, you know, say, the city of Cypress in Orange County for 3 cents for the one package that somebody bought?
Okay. All right. I was involved in a sales tax startup. We're based on geolocale. We had a programmer working for us. We had a finished model. We were like four people, okay? It cost us a big $50,000, and our program worked just as well as a $5 million program.
Right, but you know, you've got a 3 cent you know, tax bill for a city that you got to send out.
Yeah, so
you write a check and you mail it.
No, no, it's a one page program. Okay, right. Take all your data, just like if you had a sales tax. You know, what you would do in today's world in that state is you basically, I mean, New York State has 350 taxing jurisdictions.
Right.
They have a four-page sales tax form. It is not hard to take a data that you've accumulated based on the geolocale of that state and basically transfer it to the form line, and it automatically calculates it. You've already paid it. The company's already collected it. All they got to do is remit it.
Well, right, but it's the remittance cost is
right.
More than, you know, because if one person buys something in a city, you know, you got like 3 cents to pay.
No, but you don't pay it because you pay just to the state. The state basically, you list it on the form and you sent it to the state.
Depends
the state
on the state. Some states, the city individually collects the taxes. And if you've got a storefront in that city, it's no big deal. All your sales are in the city. But, you know, for an internet-based company, based on
certain states, like, you know, like New York. Well, New York is different because forget New York because of their issues.
And New York are different. But.
Yeah, and New York are different. And also, yep. New York went bankrupt, so all the tax collections is now done by New York State. But there were in California where we had local sales tax. Okay, they agreed. The cities all agreed that the money could be paid to the state, and the state would handle the distribution. I mean, that's pretty much.
And again, it's one of those things that everybody got together and worked it out in the way that made sense, and probably be okay.
Because the city can't charge a sales tax. Unless the state approves it anyway.
Right.
I mean, I work for a mid-sized internet business that does all this stuff, and when the states we have presence in, there are different tax areas based on geolocation, and we collect it and we remit it, and it's kind of a pain, but we just do it, and it's not that terrible because you only have to do it where you have physical location.
How
the problem when it's like Amazon that you have to do it everywhere.
Right, and that's going to be my question is, how big is the business you work for? What kind of numbers are you talking?
Five distribution centers, and we sell thousands and thousands of orders a day.
Okay, so yeah, so it's your company's big enough you can handle that. It's not a five-man shop.
And we've developed over time, so it's not like it's a burden. I mean,
but if we're going to use, I mean, what are we going to use as a... I understand about small business, and I understand about the cost about it. But the issue is, where's your threshold? I mean, if you're making $20,000 in that state, you know, right? Should you be able to bear the burden of paying the sales tax in that state? It's a big difference in three cents based on cost. I mean, that's $60 on a transit. I paid 60 using your 3 cents. I paid $6. I did a $6 transaction, therefore I have a $3, you know, hit. Well, the problem is, based on that, based on all the statutory regulations, you're not required to pay sales tax anyway in that state.
Because you're under that limit.
You're under the limit. So therefore, you know, you're not going to report that 3 cents. If that was your only sale in that state, forget that city, just in that entire state, and you said at 3 cents you sold it for $60, okay. Based on a 5% sales tax,
How does it work for if you?
Go ahead.
If you're at the start of the year,
January 1st, right?
And you don't know whether you're going to hit $10,000.
Right. Go ahead.
So you just keep collecting it, whether you actually are going to have to pay it or not, and that's just extra profit at the end of the year if you don't reach $10,000.
No.
Or you have to kick it back to everybody that paid it and say, "Oh, sorry, we charged you sales tax."
Go ahead.
The way that I read at least North Carolina's law is that it's in the previous year. If you reach that limit,
it's not prospective. In other words,
if you did $10,000 last year,
you're going to collect.
And even if you do just $20 this year, then
yeah,
okay,
yes.
So you just need to stop selling.
that's a business call because if you're my client, I sit there and say, you know what, sell, because next year we'll worry about it, but this year let's put the profit in our pocket. And cover our overhead?
Well, how do companies like, if you're FedEx or UPS, who has a nexus in every state.
So it's a non-issue.
But where do you collect, who gets the tax money? Where it's going to or where it's coming from?
Since FedEx is in every state, it's on a from basis.
Because that's who's paying, that's who's
purchasing. Well, no, that's, but if you're in, say,
are you talking about the actual shipping cost?
The actual shipping charge.
Yeah, some states don't even have a sales tax on shipping.
Okay, so that's not, so those companies don't pay
Well, if there's no sales tax on shipping,
okay.
Well, then, and I guess the issue is with the groups that have brick and mortar structures in those states, you can presume that they're operating in that state. They're going to have at least somebody at that building that knows how it works in that state. It's when you have somebody that they have brick and mortar structures in two states and they're doing business all 50. You know, they're in Florida. Do they necessarily know what Alaska's tax code is? Probably not, unless they go hire somebody to go figure it out.
Right. Do we have any other slides going?
Not really.
Okay, good. All right. We'll keep going with questions. So what happens now? Who knows? Yeah. Eddie, we'll keep with questions. We'll go with answers.
If there are no questions, I will state that I kind of disagree with the other two on the panel. I think that it is, in terms of constitutionality, I think it's constitutional for Amazon for the states to do this because of how much nexus is required, and it may have to do with my different reading of the law from Peter's, because I read both the New York and the North Carolina law to say that the 10,000 has to come from affiliates. That may not be how the state interprets it, and that may make my position much less tenable.
Well, and I guess the question too is, how do you view the word nexus? Are you looking at nexus in terms of tax or in terms of the way it's interpreted for civil procedure?
Yeah, just in terms of tax.
Okay.
I think that it does constitute a physical presence. I think there are a number of cases out there that say, you know, there's one case where they have in New Mexico, Dell was selling computers, and they had some people who serviced the computers under contract, and the state of New Mexico said that that was a nexus, that was a physical presence in the state. Dell said no. The state won. State Supreme Courts in New Mexico said that. There's a case from before Quill in Florida. That we went to the Supreme Court where they had, I think, 10 people in Florida who were going out soliciting orders and then and then sending those orders to their parent company. And the parent company was then fulfilling the orders and shipping them by common carrier like FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service to the customers. And the Supreme Court said, yes, that is sufficient to create a nexus to require them to collect sales taxes. Whether or not that still exists post-Quill, I think it does, but that's a questionable position.
The U.S. Supreme Court?
The Florida one was the U.S. Supreme Court, yes.
Right. I mean, if you want to get into humor, and we I deal in taxes, you deal in entertainment, so you're a student, you're definitely into humor. I mean, jeez. Let's talk humor. New Jersey. Cute little state, New Jersey. Garden State. There is no gardens left in New Jersey. It's really all cement walls.
A concrete garden, huh?
Yeah, really. New Jersey has a law. It says if you have an independent rep in a state, and if you are selling in that state, and if you sell over $5,000 in that state, you owe us income tax. Not sales tax, you owe us income tax. Minnesota says if you have an independent agent in that state, if you have sales over $500,000, they at least were a little bit friendlier to small business in that state, you now have an income tax in that state. Have the states, if you go to their websites, I mean, those are just two, there are about seven more that are doing this now. If you go to their websites and it talks about what an independent agent is. An independent agent is an affiliate, part of an affiliated program by definition. They've defined it. So therefore, you know, we're talking sales tax. Let's talk about income tax. And then let's talk about small business. And the, you know, sales tax, there are enough programs out there that no matter how you want to hit it, you hit the button, you fill out the universal form, because the forms come with the program, and I don't feel that bad. From an income tax perspective, you're talking about having a small business sit there and say, I'm not making enough friggin' profit in this state to go and pay income tax and have the compliance, much less how many accountants that you're going to have the ability to basically know the tax laws of 50 states.
Well, and at that point, I guess that would kind of force accountants to do that is what it would come down to. You'd have to, all accountants would have to have a knowledge of that.
Well, they,
just about.
They, they should have a knowledge of it, but they won't.
No.
They won't, and they'll put it in their little, they'll put it in their computer program packet.
So what you'd have to do, you'd hire a specialist.
You have to, and the cost of a specialist.
Yeah, the next, yeah, huge.
Then all of a sudden you're sitting there going from, let's say, $125 to $150 an hour.
To you jump $500, $600
to prepare a tax return.
Yeah, because, you know, it takes somebody who is that specialized. You got 5 or 10 people in the states that can do it. And
then, not to mention, you're going from, you know, a couple hours to prepare a tax return for one state to hundreds of hours to prepare tax returns for...
Actually, because of the computer program, you're not adding that much time from a computer perspective. What you are adding is the time of review.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, the review is it's just ugly. Yes, sir.
First of all, you're wrong about interest.
I just lost a case there.
I grew up there, so yeah, the one corner's all paved up, the rest is pretty nice.
Oh, that part?
No.
That part I'll accept. That part I'll accept that it is not all cement. All right, that part, in regards to the tax law, no, that one I know I'm right about.
He was ready to fight about that.
How exactly are they considering it income? Is it income of the independent agent? Is it income of the company that sold?
It's the income of the company.
And how can they justify crossing state lines to...
Because they're saying that you're independent. There's a three-prong test for income. One is, do you have salary there? Do you have employees in the state? Do you have sales in the state? And do you have a physical establishment in the state? That's the normal three. It's the three-prong test. It's the Bardell formula, and it's based on, Bardell was a manufacturing company up in Massachusetts, and that every as soon as that one passed, everybody, you know, grabbed it. So what New Jersey has stated was, well, you have sales in our state, right? You may not have anything physically in our state, because let's ignore consignment goods, but we are considering that independent contractor as your employee. We are making that distinction because you're supposed to give them a 1099 at the end of the year, and that's it. So we are taking that position, and by the way, Minnesota has taken that position also. Therefore, you've met two out of the three. And that's what, and therefore, that's why we're saying you basically have to pay an income tax.
And that's it.
Does an employee pay income tax because they work in that state? And also, is it based on just the sales in that state, or is it whatever they make across the country that they pay income tax?
Well, what it is you take the total number. I mean, I'll give you how it works. First of all, let's agree that you're in the state for this conversation. Okay. Then, therefore, you have a net income. Then you have the Bardell formula is gross sales. National, let's ignore the international aspect. So you have your numerator is your state sales, your gross sales is your denominator, your employee basically is your numerator, and then you have your entire employee base. And then basically New Jersey's cute because you don't have anything physical in our state, we're not going to give you that factor. So forget that factor. So you take those two percentages, add them together, divide by two, times it by the net income. You know, and this is, and now, have you all gotten glazed over yet?
This is why I don't
get
taxed.
Are you glazed yet?
But is it the net income in the state?
No, it's the net income of the company allocated to the state. It's an allocation because...
So, well, if you have like $10,000 worth of sale in the state, but $10 million in other states...
Yeah.
Is it basically calculated against some kind of percentage of that $10,000?
Right.
Not the $10 million.
No, it's 10,000 divided by 10 million.
Yeah, so it's a small portion of the
overall. It's a small person, but the issue is going to be, what is the cost of this? What's the cost? And New Jersey has a throwback rule to get even uglier. Let's say you had $10 million in all the states, but you're not filing in all the states because you don't have an employee or an independent contractor in all the states. Well, Jersey says, if you don't file in that state, okay, that sales isn't classified as New Jersey sales. He's cracking up. How do I make a living? Give me a break. They're laughing at my fundamental economics.
Wow.
And that's the throwback rule, which is says you can't say that you allocated sales to a state that you don't file in, so we're going to claim it.
Oh, my God.
See?
Yes,
but I do apologize about the whole cement. But I, by the way, lived in Princeton, and it got paid.
All right, if you are a business and you have profit,
mm-hmm.
right?
Are we talking about an income or sales? Because I changed.
Income.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure about that.
Let's just say
mm-hmm.
that I'm, as the owner, I take 75% of the profit as my salary and 25% I put back to business. I have to pay an income tax
and the business tax.
Mm-hmm.
If right. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to have to pay another tax to New Jersey.
Wait. Yeah, but understand. Understand this. If you have to allocate, if you allocate to New Jersey, right, then you're also allocating in New York. Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. New York.
I mean, you basically we're ignoring the federal aspect because the federal is federal. All right. So let's talk about this. Let us say you do 75% of your business in New York, allocation wise, and I went through that ridiculous formula, and 25% in New Jersey. Well, you had $100,000, and I'm using this for a reason because I like round numbers. So $100,000 of net profit times 75% is $75,000. That gets taxed in New York State. We're going to ignore New York City, please.
Not the old 25,000.
No, they only get 75,000. Jersey, you're going to file a tax return and declare $25,000 worth of profit in New Jersey, and New Jersey gets that part. So you haven't gotten taxed twice. Now, if you basically allocate to New Jersey, and you basically take 100% in New York, then you need to go to your accountant who prepared the returns. Hopefully you're using accountant. You need to understand, I grew up in New York City public schools where basically teachers were allowed to hit you, and basically take the ruler, the wooden one, and smack him over his head because he's not doing your tax return right and you're paying too much taxes.
But there,
you can't use a ruler anymore.
No, I don't think you can use a ruler. They'll
throw
you
out. Not anymore.
Yeah. You can still do it in some counties in North Carolina.
So you're supposed to be concerned with their feelings. You can't do that in Mississippi, and Mississippi is about as conservative as you get.
Oh.
At least the parents have to agree to it. But
yes.
I think you sort of addressed this in the first minute of the panel, but I might be using the wrong term, so.
It's all about vocabulary when we're up here. Don't worry.
Has anyone made, I think it's called like a letter of retainer, there's a D in there, challenge against these laws where you said you specifically are not targeting Amazon, but I detect like a wink in there of saying, yes, we created a formula that said, you have to have sales in all 50 states, you have to have done business of X number, and now lo and behold, it's only these two companies that happen to, quote, accidentally match that pattern.
Well, that's why it's called the Amazon tax.
Yeah, I don't think there's any wink to it. I mean, it's pretty clear.
I think it's pretty blatant between you and me.
Right. Yeah, and that's
a constitutional letter. That's what I'm talking about, a challenge to say that even though you made the formula generic that matches against our business model, everybody knows you're really trying to attack.
Well, their statement is, is this law going to affect Amazon? Absolutely. Is this law going to affect Overstock.com? Absolutely. Can this law affect BarnesandNoble.com? Absolutely. These are all companies that are large internet retailers. That's really what it is. Was Amazon stated specifically as an example of a company that is abusing the system? Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, you could try it. I don't know how far you get.
I don't think, because understand, states are allowed to discriminate. I don't understand why people think they're not. States have discriminated all their, I mean, take a look at your research and development credits. Take a look, take a look at your film credits. I mean, I get, in Georgia, I mean, I did a lecture about the film credit, the production in Georgia and how you had to, how specifically, it is a discriminating tax.
Yeah.
You'll go to Mississippi.
Yeah, Mississippi has a similar film credit where they basically match. If you spend $100,000 on something in Mississippi, they'll turn hand you $100,000 back.
That's right.
So, because they want to build their film industry, right. And they can do that.
I mean, you want to take a look. You take a look at the rural areas. They have an internet access credit where they actually give you, as you lay line fiber optic, if you can prove it's a rural area, they will give you a credit that you can sell again to another company in regards to state income tax.
My question is saying the states are obviously doing it.
Yeah.
Congress is the authority, the only authority, yeah, able to legislate this under interstate commerce.
But this is not interstate. This is intrastate. No.
Yeah, and I guess that's really the question is it or is it not? And right. I feel like it is.
If anyone posed that challenge and said, this is really a letter of attainder, you are targeting us specifically. Sure, it's a collusion, and so it looks like independent action.
But you see, I understand, but I guess I would look at it this way. And by the way, I agree. I think it's an interstate issue. But obviously, the company didn't, because Amazon got through the Supreme Court of New York. They lost, therefore their neck.
Which, and one thing you might want to know with New York, the Supreme Court is the lowest court. And every other state, the Supreme Court is the highest court.
But they did, the Court of Appeals in New York, which is the highest court, affirmed.
Yeah, okay. They affirmed it. Okay. They affirmed it. So their next place to go should have been federal court if they want to argue, if they wanted to argue the interstate commerce position. They didn't go.
Well, that was part B of my...
I'm sorry, I beat part A. I killed part A because of part B.
Well, part B was, because of all of this kabuki, the NWA law, regulatory capture, say, you know, Amazon looks like they're being beat up, but they're using that for, propaganda reasons or just business publication. Just
like, all right, and that
we're the victim. What they really have done is lobbied and say, we're going to crush our competitors by pretending to be the victim of this. Mattel did it, NRA did it, a couple of, you know, very large organizations across political spectrums that said, you know, we're just going to get in bed with the legislators and pretend like we're being beat up. Politicians get the credit for attacking Mattel with the lead poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that actually got out of not having to do a lot of it.
Amazon collected $120 million worth of tax, okay, in New York State. My question is, if they collected paid over $120 million, here's my question, okay? My question is, how many people didn't buy from Amazon because of the sales tax? All right, no one knows. So it had an economic effect on them.
It's just kind of hard to quantify.
Yeah, you can't quantify a lost sale.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Alanka, how are you?
Not to buy books from them.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure that...
I go to bookdepository.com and I get my books shipped free from England.
Right, and I'm sure there are plenty of people like you that do that. And so, from their standpoint, is a business judgment of, is it worth losing your business to do the other things they want to do? And apparently in New York, it was.
Yeah, in New York, they're more than happy.
Wasn't there a recent change about the rules for when you have to issue a 1099 between businesses? And so all of a sudden, you know, something like more than $200 or $300
for business,
$600?
No, what? What?
You have to issue a 1099. Well, doesn't that go back to you issued a 1099 to somebody in our state and you have a presence there?
Well, I mean, that's all right. First of all, to clarify that. I almost jumped down. Somebody was talking about taxes to artists, and I was so glad I had my drinking buddy with me, because I was like, oh, let me just beat this person up. She's lying to these people. I mean, the law in regards to $600 has always been in place since I've been practicing an accountant, and I've been practicing as an accountant for over 37 years. What the law change stated is, it used to be that if you sold to a business or a corporation, you didn't have to do it. Now you do. Okay, that they just expanded the definition of who gets the 1099.
Well, it was, no, I understood that.
Okay.
The thing is,
but
if the measurement of having an employee in a state is you issued a 1099,
which is what it is. Right. I mean, what the feds have done is saying, we don't trust you, and the states are piggybacking saying, and you called them an employee because you gave them non-employee compensation. They're saying any type of compensation no longer has to be an employee to create nexus in the state.
So basically, they're trying to undercut some of the benefits of having independent contractors.
Right, and their statement is that a lot of the, and here goes a different hat I wear. I do a lot of work for undocumented employees in litigation, and pretty much these are people that are, you know, people are being called or told that they're not employees. so that the company does not have to pay their Social Security tax, doesn't have to give them health benefits. There might be a pension issue involved. It's better to make them an independent contractor, even though if you go through, I think it's like 20 steps from the IRS, that you basically are really an employee. But they'd rather run that risk of getting caught that way than basically pay the benefits. And so the states have pretty much said, we know that these people are probably your employees.
There's people who abuse the system, and they're trying to react to that, but at the same time, the net goes pretty wide.
Well, that's how the government does. When the government throws the net, it's always been determined that the net basically is way too wide. But they're doing it for a specific and distinct, very small sliver.
And part of the problem, in my opinion, for what it's worth, is that, you know, the whole thing is too complicated. So it's A, it makes it easier to do junk like that, and B, it means that you have to come up with even more complicated solutions to the complicated problems that you created. So,
right.
You know, but it gives lawyers and accountants stuff to bill for. So I guess I can't complain too much.
I don't complain at all. every tax simplification act that comes out, I keep looking at it as my annuity to retire. Because, you know, each time they simplify it, they really screw it up. You know, which is probably why, you know, I think there's only 4 CPAs in Congress. And personally, I think 3 of them bribed their way into getting a CPA.
Who knows? All right, well, we got any more questions?
Any answers? We'll take answers.
All right, well.
I think we're done.
Okay, well, thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joy.